Tony. Great discussion. I just wanted to have Manny go ahead and give the directions for the questions.
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions.
I think while we're polling for the questions, I just wanted to remark, and Tony, we didn't talk about this, but I know some of the major concepts of Madeline Leninger when she was developing the transcultural theory for nursing was that she really felt that cultural competence was an important component of nursing because the cultural influences really all spheres of human life, and she felt that it really defined health and wellness and illness and really helped folks depend on their cultural influence to search for relief for their disease or their distress. And we didn't really talk about it, but maybe this is something that we can put out to the audience members, is that she also really felt that religious and cultural knowledge was an important ingredient in healthcare, especially for the healthcare provider, that we need to be flexible in the design of our programs and our policies and our services to be cognizant of our patients' culturally diverse, you know, their population and what they're coming. And I know, you know, not to get into a lot of religious discussion,
right,
but certainly, you know, when we think about Jehovah's Witnesses, and that's a population that I had a lot of experience working with when I was in the ICU.
Right.
And, you know, that was obviously an issue because of not receiving blood products.
Yes,
and
sure that you didn't pull too much out for some of the testing, too.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. And so my point really is to ask the audience members if they could share maybe perhaps any other religious or cultural experiences that you have had, just to enlighten us as a group, because certainly I think, Tony, you've done a great job kind of you know, discussing some of the groups that many of us come in contact, but certainly as global of a village as we've become, it's certainly not an exhaustive list.
Right.
You know, so we put that out to the audience members. But, you know, I didn't know if you had any additional experiences clinically in your practice. Hello?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were asking, like, for the audience.
Sorry, I thought you'd comment, too.
Sorry. Yeah, like we mentioned, sometimes for some of our, I guess, being in the ICU, we did have some for some of the African-American descents. I'm drawing a blank. The Nigerian folks, they believe that if you weren't right spiritually, that things happen to you. And that we actually had a patient that did have a form of cancer that happened to be on our unit. And the patient was crying, and the nurse happened to say, well, you know, you need to look back at what you did to deserve this. And we're like, oh, my gosh. I mean, the husband was very upset about that. But and that's what they believe in their culture, that maybe something that they've done wrong or, you know, weren't spiritually right, that they had gotten this disease. So, and, you know, sometimes maybe that wasn't the right thing for her to say, but that's what she felt. And that was kind of hard to rectify, but, you know, they weren't, the husband wasn't very happy, and neither was the wife when she heard that, so.
Sure, and I think that's probably a lesson, is that, you know, perhaps it's incumbent upon us as professionals to try to educate ourselves as much as possible with our different patient populations, certainly as we come into contact.
Right. And I know some of the nursing students that we have coming through, too. I mean, just I think with travel, the way we have it, it's gotten so global that we just have patients from all over. And they come to our medical center to seek the best care because we have so such a wide variety of hospitals and healthcare. And, you know, with Methodist Hospital, MD Anderson, UT, Baylor, and a lot of the nursing schools that are there, too, and just really the medical center. It's like being in its own little, like you said, global village.
Yeah. So let me open up and see, Manny, do we have any questions in queue?
Yes, our first question comes from the line of Amy Perrin-Ross. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, Jen and Tony. Thank you so much, Tony, for a nice presentation. You know, one thing I had to add to some of Jen's comments would be thinking about how some of our products that we use in MS are derived. For example, Chinese hamster ovary cells or blood products in the case of IVIG. And I think that it's incumbent upon us to let our patients know, particularly if we suspect that there might be a cultural issue that prohibits the use of perhaps some of the ingredients in these products. We need to let the patients know what they, you know, what the origin or the derivative of those are, because we certainly don't want to violate something inadvertently for those patients.
No, you're absolutely right, and you make a good point, because Dr. Rivera mentioned that about with the Jewish population, that maybe there might have been bovine in one of the medication or the products. And, you know, he checked, is that going to be okay with you? You make a very good point, Amy.
Yeah, I was going to say excellent point, Amy, because we actually ran into this issue when I was at Columbia. One of the, ACTH products is a porcine derivative, and it's not considered halal for Muslim patients. And so that's something that, it's not something that maybe we don't come in contact or think about every day, but it's absolutely a respect issue for our patients and a respect for their cultural beliefs and, what they're comfortable with. I think that's such a great, great point. Any other comments, Amy?
Nope, that's all I wanted to say. Very nice presentation, Tony. Very comprehensive. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Amy. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Amy. Any additional questions, Manny?
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, please press star 1 to ask a question.
You know, Jen, I also, since we had mentioned about interpreters, I checked to see how much the cost would be for interpreter service. Now, the one that we use, you have to have a minimum of 2 hours, and because everywhere in our facility you have to pay for parking, so the parking needs to be included. So it's about $40 per hour, given a 24-hour notice, and that's no matter what language. $60 per hour after hours, which is after 6 p.m. and on weekends. And it's $80 per hour for emergency or same-day request or short notice. And they had just a multiple of language, including sign language. There is Cambodian, Chinese, Croatian, Lithuanian, Slovak, Serbian, Russian, Vietnamese, Ukrainian, Czech, Danish, and some that I probably can't even pronounce correctly. So.
Wow, that's incredible. And is that billed to the patient, or is that something that's billed to the clinic and that's just kind of incorporated in their operating costs?
I think that's incorporated or absorbed in the cost of the center or the clinic.
And, you know, I was going to say and put this out there to the audience as well, and maybe you could comment on it, Tony, while we're waiting, is that, you know, in research, that being a very sensitive, obviously, as a result of Tuskegee, public, quote-unquote, public health syphilis experiments. In research, we become so diligent about making sure people have read the informed consent and that, we try to have them in Spanish as well as in English if, native language is Spanish. And I just didn't know if you have conducted informed consent in any additional languages or, when you're doing research, Tony, have you found that you guys are even more sensitive because of a result of what's gone on historically? Or
We have not. It's generally been Spanish and English. I think that the folks that do travel here, they're only here for a limited time and then have to return back to their country.
Okay.
I think what we were told is that for the Middle Eastern that they, I think that they are paid so much money to stay here in the States. And so the care has to be pretty much on cue, and there needs to be medical necessity of why the stay is extended. So we haven't had really any other type of informed consents other than English and Spanish.
And are you in Texas, do you have a lot of bilingual healthcare providers that are providing care
for yes.
US patients?
Yes. With Dr. Rivera and Dr. Hutton, we had quite a few Latin America folks. So they spoke Spanish was their primary or their first a language, and then English second. We have had some Serbian, Greek, Indian, Middle Eastern. So they have always been bilingual.
Yeah, my experience at Columbia was that we had a lot of Haitian and Islanders, and then also Europeans. But
mm-hmm.
So we spoke primarily, you know, obviously English, and
right.
Spanish was easy to come by, and French a little here and there when it was needed. But for the most part, we would also have the interpreter services as well.
Right.
And then I think you also commented on the fact that not only we have to also think about different cultural, but different handicaps as a form of language, and having a deaf patient or having a blind patient,
mm-hmm.
right, or, you know, just being able to be sensitive to ways that people actually receive conveyed information.
Right. We did have a patient that was hearing impaired and blind, and I think it was due to infections and medication. And so communicating with her, I mean, she does have a box or a televox or some type, I'm sorry, televox is who calls our patients, but they have a device that she types in, and then the healthcare provider types in the response. She'll ask the question, or he'll ask the question, and then she types her response.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So I'd like to ask Manny, is there any additional questions in queue?
Yes, we just got a question from the line of Dottie Thole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and thanks for a great presentation.
Thanks, Dottie.
I will not bore you with all the funny cultural stories over the years, because I think we all have them. But my favorite is a Muslim patient who, every time I suggested he undress, he said okay, and I said okay, and he said okay, and I said okay, and he said okay. And when I finally said, you are going to need to take your trousers off, he said, not with you in here, I'm not. But I won't do that. But what I was thinking of, though, is that what you conveyed very nicely is an openness to other cultures and also a respect. And I think even if you don't know all the particulars and whatever, people really do understand when you're trying.
Right.
And that's very important when we can convey the sense of, I'd like to understand and I'll work with you on it. But I'd also heard that when you study other cultures, what you really learn is about your own.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were talking, I was thinking of, we have our own, even just within our nursing group's culture. We tend to be kissy-huggy and glad to see one another, and I'm sure you've been aware of when you greet a patient, some are warm and effusive, and others are very holdback. And, you know, so even just not with national or religious differences or whatever, but the culture that people have or have created for themselves, too, and I think we learn to read people a little bit and respect that. As I get older, too, I notice people are very deferential to me because of my age, which is really sort of funny. And I can't say it's in general, but many of the Asian and Hispanic patients, their families, they call me Mommy. And I like it very much. Grandma, I get a little touchy about it.
Yeah.
But the terms of endearment, et cetera, you know, are really, I think, vary with age and with culture and even within a culture. And the other thing that came to mind, and I don't know if you have had this experience, but there's no one culture. Like, within a group, one generation may be entirely different from another generation. So perhaps the where it's a very patriarchal situation, and then you've got the younger generation that's, no way, you know, I'm not doing it that way.
Right.
Or try to enforce that on the parent, and can get very complicated.
No, you're absolutely right. I know that some of my friends that are speak Spanish, and they said that their kids don't want to learn Spanish because none of their friends speak Spanish. So it's, you know, it's kind of like they don't understand that they're losing the culture. And I think it's important. My nephew and my niece are half Hispanic and half Vietnamese. And my nephew at that time, his grandparents didn't really speak English, so they spoke to him in Vietnamese. And I told my mom, you should speak to him in Spanish, so that way he would be trilingual.
Well, I know we had a tremendous problem with, we had a large influx of Southeast Asians in Philadelphia some years back. And the problem was that because of interpreting for the patients, the children were often asked to interpret for the elders. And that's a real reversal within the culture, where the aged are the smart ones, the ones who are revered and looked to for their wisdom. So then you have kids having to assume that role, and that was enormously difficult. And then there's the simple question of embarrassment. And that's something I deal with in my practice more than anything, of where perhaps you have a mother who's disabled and it's primarily her son who's caring for her. And has to perform intimate aspects of her care.
Right.
And I've had to deal, you know, with a patient who needed to catheterize or assistance with catheterization, and there really wasn't anyone, and had to work very hard then to get the kinds of support in so that the son wasn't then asked to perform this on his mother.
That's a great point, Dottie. I mean, and the sensitivity extends, you know, like you said, it goes beyond cultural. It also, you know, kind of transcends age and, you know, belief systems, family cultures even.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
Well, thank you. And thank you both. And congratulations, Jen.
Oh, thanks, hey.
Welcome back.
Thank you. We take another question, Manny.
Certainly. Our next question comes from the line of Lori Mayer. Please go ahead.
Hi, Tony. Hi, Jen. Can you hear me all right?
Yes. You're great. Thanks.
Okay, good. Nice talk, Tony. You know, I have a couple questions for you. You had mentioned that your in-law? One was half Spanish, half Vietnamese.
That's my nephew, yes.
It's your nephew. Okay. So how, and I really don't know quite the answer to this, but how did they decide? In clinical research, we always have to ask the subject what their race is. You know, that's part of the demographics that we are, the information that we're collecting. Who decides which way do they go? I mean, do you have any idea?
I tried to get a hold of the census department to see how do we figure that out. And after holding for maybe 20 minutes or so, I had to go, but I was not able to find out that question. But it is a good question. I'll have to ask my sister, what does his birth certificate say?
I guess I was wondering, really, who makes the decision? I don't know if it's the hospital.
You know, is it the physician there, or who, you know, types up the birth certificate or takes that information? That part I don't know.
Right. Okay. Well, that's just something that I don't know if anybody in the audience would know about it, but that would be a great question. I was just very, very curious about that. As far as that goes. And I think there's somebody else in queue. Why don't you go ahead and them, and they can leave me in queue because I do have another question.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Yes, we have another question from the line of Amy Perrin Ross. Please go ahead.
Sorry, it's only me again. I just had a quick story that really brought the whole issue of cultural sensitivity home to me. One of my patients, Madge, who was diagnosed in 2000 by us, is a lady of Indian descent. A family, both her and her husband's family, are from some very small villages outside of Mumbai. And he came with her for the first two visits, the workup and then the confirmation of the diagnosis back then. And was not terribly supportive, but, you know, was there for her. When it came to the time of decision-making for therapy, it was clear that he wasn't sure that she really needed therapy because, in fact, she had recovered from her symptoms and he thought she'd be just fine without it. But she attended several more education sessions and decided on an injectable therapy. She was on that, and she was extremely diligent. I mean, would get very anxious if she had forgotten to take her medicine, you know, one day and would call me the next and say, oh, my gosh, what do I do, you know. And one day she called me a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, just really crying. And I said, my heavens, what's wrong? She said, well, I don't know what to do. I haven't missed more than one injection in 5 years or 6 years, she said, but my husband's family is coming to spend 6 weeks with us this summer, and my husband refuses to allow me to inject. He does not want anyone in the family to know that I have this problem because in our culture it's perceived as a great weakness, and he's refusing to allow me to inject. Well, the long story short is that we were able to, he even refused to allow her to have any medication in the home.
Oh, wow.
We were able to get her to work with a very close friend, neighbor, that lady that lived three doors down, who allowed her to store her medication in their garage refrigerator, and she would go over when it was time for an injection and simply do it while she was over there, so there was no indication. And for her part, she wore long sleeves and long skirts for the 6 weeks duration in the summer for their visit. But it really struck home about culture and how culture can impact our patients in many ways more than what we think and than what we can impact.
And that's pretty tough too, because, you know, usually most of the women are kind of like, I think in all cultures, are kind of like the glue, and they hold everybody together, and so mom or wife can't be sick.
Right.
And but wow, Amy, that's that's pretty. I mean, and you know, my hat off to your patient for trying to still go, knowing that that could cause some great tension with the family.
It taught me a lot about cultural sensitivity, because what I wanted to say to your husband is not repeatable.
Yeah, but I think that's a sign of you being a great nurse, in the sense that, you know, it's not imposing your own belief system, but in fact being open to theirs and being respectful of the fact that although you may not entirely understand it or agree with it, being respectful of what is important to them.
And it, my role as a nurse was to try to help her think of alternatives, because she was just so upset at the possibility that her disease would dramatically worsen while they were there if she missed her shots and things of that nature, that she needed somebody who could think clearly to offer her some options.
Well, that was good planning on your part.
It was planning by the seat of my pants.
Another sign of a great nurse.
Yeah.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you for that.
Are there any additional questions in queue, Manny?
I did want to remind everyone to please press *1 to ask a question. Just one more or re-poll.
Yeah, but we'll just poll. If nobody else, then I'll turn it over to Tony for closing remarks before we close out. But I wanted to give everybody an opportunity if they had something they'd like to share, just, you know, a clinical anecdotal experience that would be helpful for the rest of the group, or
any additional factual information to kind of edify what we've already discussed, we'd just like to give you guys the opportunity to share.
Well, and I think Amy made a good point, because I feel like our patients don't even have to be cultural, you know, in a different culture, because we had one patient that said she couldn't let her work know because she was in a high-profile position, because she said if she had any type of disease going on or healthcare issues, then they would try to take that position from her.
Mm. Yeah, so we even have, there's definitely, as Amy kind of pointed out earlier, is that we have our own healthcare. I mean, and Dottie also said our own, you know, culture within our own healthcare system, and
exactly,
you know, within each profession, actually. So, is Manny, was there any other questions that came up in queue?
We did have another question from Laurie Mayer. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, Jen. Hi, Tony. I just have to say that Amy brought up, both Amy and Dottie brought up really good examples about, you know, how the culture really does impact us more than we really, really think, and really can cause some ethical issues.
For sure.
Yeah,
you know, that.
And I think that, you know, Laurie, you make kind of bring up a good point, too, because when we're talking to patients about family planning, maybe in their culture it might be to not use contraceptives. You know, their goal is to reproduce, to tell them, I'm sorry, you can't get pregnant while on this medication. That could, you know, also be an issue to have to try to work around.
Well, and that's true. And then when you're screening and enrolling for a clinical trial, that definitely, you know, birth control is usually one of the inclusion criteria, that they have to agree to it. So for some patients, that can eliminate that particular clinical trial for them.
Right.
That's a great point, Laurie.
But anyway, I think we had some really good examples tonight, and Tony, I really enjoyed your examples that you gave. One other thing that I did want to mention, you know, and sometimes maybe it's probably just me, but sometimes I do get frustrated because you had talked about, you know, Hispanic families, and we do have a lot of Hispanic families in our practice, and sometimes in our office is very small, we just don't have the room to have the whole family in there. So how do you usually handle that type of situation?
What we usually do is, whether, because we also have that with the Romani patients, and so we ask them who is the patient, who are making the decision process, and the patient, can you please point out, and you're allowed to have four people with you, or, you know, four people total. So please choose who will be in that decision-making process. So that way it kind of empowers them and lets them feel like they are still in charge and making the decisions. So that way you're not really taking that right away, but you're just limiting it.
Now, that's a good way to do it. Sometimes we have to limit in the infusion suite, but just in the exam room itself, you know, giving them the opportunity to decide, that's a really good way to do it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Laurie. Well, I think this, as long as there are no other questions in queue, Manny?
We have no further questions at this time.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and just kind of wrap up for this evening. Did you have any closing thoughts, Tony, before I wrap it up?
No, just that I wanted to say that our family is kind of like a melting pot, my husband being from Louisiana, and I'm of Hispanic descent. Like I mentioned, my niece and nephew are half Hispanic, half Vietnamese. My sister-in-law, my two nieces, the twins, are half Israeli and half Caucasian. So we have quite a bit of diversity in our family, and that's why I think it's just always important to learn different customs. And so that way, you know, like we said, we travel, also encountering some of the patients and in our practice, I think that's kind of helped me. And I just want to kind of share that so that way everybody else is able to kind of have the same success and establish a rapport with their patient as well. And really, thank you for taking the time, everybody, to call in and listen. I appreciate that.
Thank you. So on behalf of the IOMASEN Town Hall Discussions, I'd like to thank Tony for your presentation, and thank you again to the audience members, as well as to Novartis for supporting these programs through the Unrestricted Educational Grant. And just as a reminder, if you have colleagues who may not have been able to be present on the call, or if you'd like to go back, there, the presentation will be archived as a podcast on the IOMSN website, as well as Tony's slides and references and a list of resources, which you can access at www.iomsn.org. And please join us next month on Wednesday evening, June 13th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the next town hall discussion entitled Aging in MS Patients, which will be presented by Dr. Mary Jean Busey. We thank you for your time this evening and enjoy the rest of your night. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation.